If you ask the best in the world the single greatest secret to success, they'll smile and give a gentle laugh. You're asking the wrong question. Being extraordinary is not a single element. It cannot be distilled down to one thing. We're told that being a success is a magical thing that happens in a place you'll arrive. The hard part is that this long-held truth is the biggest lie. Extraordinary features humans that have reached the top of their field and become extraordinary humans. The door to being extraordinary is now open. Will you walk in? Hey, what is up, everybody? Jeremy here. And guys, I'm very excited for today's interview as we have a legend with us today. We have Frank Shamrock, and he's a legend from the UFC world. Frank, thank you so much for hanging out with me today.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Frank, I've followed your career for a long time, so I'm excited to get a chance to chat with you. But I wanted to kind of start a little bit with your youth, because you did have a difficult upbringing and you left home very young. And I'm just curious, like, what effect that had on you?
Well, I mean, I don't know it any other way, but it was certainly tough to, you know, leave my home when I was 11 years old and sort of start surviving on my own. You know, I'm very thankful that the state of California has a pretty robust juvenile system. So, but yeah, I mean, it was weird not having a family and, you know, I grew up with siblings, so not having them. I mean, it's kind of one of the things it's done for me is sort of develop this, you know, modern idea of family, which is, you know, anybody and everybody that kind of enhances your life and, you know, lives in and around you and kind of supports what you're doing. So it certainly changed, you know, I think my normal trajectory, but I don't know it another way. Yeah.
I'm curious, do you know the story of Michael and Bruce Buffer by any chance?
I do, yeah. Yeah, Bruce.
They were brothers and they didn't realize they were brothers for quite a while. I'm curious, were you able to reconnect with your family at all? Was that not something you were interested in doing, or how did that go for you?
Yeah, I totally reconnected with my family, you know, in my 20s after I got out of prison and kind of, you know, finished my juvenile, criminal career. I kept light touch with them, but yeah, I have three siblings, or I had three siblings. My brother passed away in 2018. So I have two sisters, a younger one and an older one, and my mom's still alive. So I've definitely maintained a relationship with them.
That's cool. And you mentioned the experience of going to prison. I'd heard your conversation with James Altucher, and I think this is like 4 years ago now, when you talked about, you know, how prison kind of changed you in a lot of ways, like, you know, not just as a fighter, but also physically, right? Like you came out, you know, looking more, you know, muscular and things like that. So I'm curious for you, how did that prison experience change you? And how did it also set you up in some ways for a path of success in the fighting world?
Well, it definitely set me up because, you know, it was the one time where I could do nothing but lift weights and build myself stronger and kind of put an investment, you know, into my body. You know, prior to that, I was just kind of a loose cannon and a, you know, a kid. And, you know, I'd certainly say from a business perspective and from a success perspective, you know, it's the first time I ever sat down with myself and I was totally real. And then I started making solutions or taking actions to sort of solve what my problems were. And, you know, to also make changes, you know, inside myself. And I say this in my corporate leadership things, I recommend everyone go to prison, you know, for a year or so, because it's just a wonderful time to focus on what's most important.
Wow.
Yeah.
One of the things I found interesting about that experience, Frank, is you talked about too, like, you know, when you're looking at groups, you know, in that prison dynamic, there was like a respect for those that were willing to fight, whether you lost or won. And, you know, there was kind of like no respect for if you weren't willing to do that. You know, I guess, what was that experience like and how did that affect your mindset?
Well, I learned that early on, just kind of running the streets. You know, if you don't stand up for yourself, if you don't, you know, defend yourself, then what's really weird, especially in the prison environment, is your own group turns against you. You know, your own race, your own whatever you're running with, you know, they view you as weaker. So, you know, I presented well, you know, I knew how to walk the walk. But in especially in prison and even in life, I mean, you have to stand up for yourself when you're under attack. You have to defend. Otherwise, you know, and I talk about this in schools with bullying. If you don't stand up and say something, then it just invites everyone else, you know, to sort of participate in that because they see that there's weakness or they see, you know, that there's opportunity. But yeah, in prison, you have to fight.
Yeah, it seems like there's really no respect if you just choose not to. But I'm curious as well, because like, at the same time, like, you know, fighting for you is a career, but you also like, you can't solve all of your problems with fighting. So I guess, how did you kind of, you know, channel that, and was in some ways, you know, the fighting world the way to channel that for you?
Well, fighting was just a great, call it an expression, because I had all this angst and I had all these social issues. And, you know, because it came from a home of abuse, I didn't really have interpersonal skills. And so, you know, I had basic conversation, but if it got past a certain point, or if it got to something, you know, that made me feel uncomfortable, I didn't really know how to deal with it. And so when I talk about martial arts as an expression, using your body, using your mind, you know, being involved in a higher study or a higher purpose, you know, that helps grow you as a person. And then for me, it was teaching the martial arts, because once I started learning it, I realized that through teaching it, I could become much better. And that's where I started developing my ability to communicate and to articulate. And I mean, that's really why I'm a speaker today, is because, you know, through teaching and through presenting. And every time you do that, every time you say something that you mean, or you have that has value to you or purpose, you know, you kind of grow as a person. So yeah, I don't recommend violence as a solution. In fact, it should be the last and the only resort. Like, if you can't get out of it, you know, then you got to deal with it. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, there's a million ways to deal with it. And, you know,
well, I guess, like, looking at, you know, starting that martial arts training, the thing that I'm trying to make the connection here is, you came out, martial arts was really a thing for you. Did that come from the Shamrocks, or was that something you discovered at the same time? And, like, I guess, where did that whole world kind of intersect?
Sure. Yeah. Well, for me, you know, Bob Shamrock, who became my father and was my group home dad, he really believed that through athleticism and team sports and participation, that you would grow as a human being. And then he was a big fan of bodybuilding. And so he kind of infused that with me and taught me to build your body, build your mind, build your spirit. So I had this base of kind of, you know, personal development, physical development when I went into prison. And prison gave me time to focus on that. And when I came out, I mean, I was 195 pounds. I was massive, you know, human being of muscle. And then mixed martial arts had just started. So it was kind of this, you know, hey, you've made this investment, go over here and apply it. And unbeknownst to me, I didn't know what martial arts was. I didn't know it was this, you know, community effort, this social effort, you know, that you train in groups. Like, I didn't really get it until I got there. And then I found that all those skills were really valuable. And then I just grew those skills. You know, you need to have honor and respect and discipline. You need all these components if you're going to be a good warrior and be successful at it, because you can't do it alone. And so it was through that journey that, you know, these martial arts principles kind of became so valuable to me, because I realized I had to meditate. I realized I had to take care of my body. I had to eat good. I had to care for people. They wouldn't train with me. So it just became this social development tool for me that's since, you know, grown a worldwide community for me.
And you came into UFC at a very interesting time period, because there was a piece ESPN had done last year, and it was about when it started. It was the program The Ultimate Fighter. And I believe Ken was one of the first ones to be a part of that whole world. So you kind of came into this as UFC was really developing and things like that. And you were one of the first fighters to really take all these different styles and kind of bring them together, including being an incredible athlete. So I'm curious to find, like, how you brought different styles into what you did and why you, like, sought out those different styles. Because it is what made you incredible, what you did, because other guys were either, okay, I'm a wrestler, or, you know, I'm more of a boxer. So for you, how did you bring all those things together? Because really, current fighters are modeled off of what you did.
Yeah, I was the first complete fighter. And, you know, it was really an evolution of my prison time. You know, in prison, I learned to study and have discipline and track my workouts and always be seeking knowledge, both for my personal self and then about my body. And then when I got out, you know, mixed martial arts had just started. But, you know, because I came from the streets, you know, when I'd ask questions, I could tell when people didn't know the answer. And so that's put me in search of the answer. And then, you know, finally, you know, martial arts is the greatest teacher of all, because if you do it wrong, you punch in the face. If it doesn't work, you feel pain. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to be in this creative mindset of needing to learn things. And the difference between me at that time and the other, you know, fighters is, you know, it's very machismo, tough guy, you know, I'm here because I'm tough. And I wasn't tough. Mm-hmm. I was scared. So I was comfortable asking questions, and I was comfortable taking notes, and I was comfortable, you know, taking this sort of scholastic approach to it. And that made all the difference in the world, because I didn't know what I didn't know. I wasn't scared to learn it. I was scared to not have information and get hurt. And that's what I coach people in business, I was like, you got to keep learning about your business, about your competitors, about the space. You know, for me, I came into the space when it was brand new. Nobody really knew anything about fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And it allowed me to, you know, rise to the top because I was always curious about it and I didn't want to get hurt.
How did you, I guess, seek that training? What did you study tape? Did you go out and locate people that were good at it and learn from them? Because I'm a big believer in the mentorship model, but I'm curious for you how you went out and found and developed those different skills.
I sought them out. I looked them up. You know, tape was rare back then. People sharing their tapes was rare back then. And so as I began teaching martial arts, I began invited to teach more martial arts, and that continued to expose me to different worlds. And then, you know, I was genuinely curious once I got there, like, hey, you know, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And, you know, show me this and show me that. And then I would take that information, bring it back to what I knew about the human body, what I knew about was working for me. And I was able to just, you know, find people that had information. Now, the hardest part of that was, you know, these are, you know, successful people, or they're masters in their space. And many of them only wanted to share their information when it was connected to them. And so, you know, or, you know, didn't want me to try something that they didn't believe in. So the hardest part was filtering out the information that I knew was most valuable and then sort of getting rid of the rest of it. You know, and that's what Bruce Lee talked about, you know, what works get used and then what doesn't work, get rid of it. But all of it came from other people, from mentors, from people that had the knowledge that I was seeking.
And I think the really cool thing about it is I'd heard you say this in another interview, because the viewpoint you're coming at this from is very cool, because you had said, quote, that, you know, I was studying the biomechanics of the human body. Everyone else was studying fighting. So you were learning all these different skill sets, but you were working, okay, how does the body work with this and how does the body function? And that's why it was very difficult for other fighters to handle you.
Totally. Yeah. And I had, you know, my system, my body had been built up and was a tremendous machine. You know, when you add to that things that functionally work for you, you know, that don't go against your body. You know, fighting is really science. I mean, anyone can land a lucky shot. Anyone can hurt you. But the reality is it's the science of your body applied to this technique, to this situation. And I just stayed on that course, even, you know, to the very end of my career when my body was falling apart. And I was like, well, the machine's not working as good as it is. So let's do these things, you know, to sort of support it.
I'm interested to find that as well, because UFC was a very new sport. So it was different than, you know, a lot of sports that have been established and going for a while. So you have kind of these two tracks of, you know, you getting better at your craft in a sport that's also developing. And so I've heard that at one point in time, Mr. Shamrock had said to you, well, you can either strip or fight as one of the things you were given as options. So I guess for you, you know, when did you really like know this was going to be what you were going to do? Because I'm sure like there wasn't a lot of certainty early on.
There was not a lot of certainty at all. In fact, Bob gave me that pitch right as I was getting out of Folsom Prison. And he's like, hey, your body looks great. You put all this investment in here. These are your two options. And I'm always trying to look forward in my life and achieve the dreams that I have. And one of my dreams was to be a professional athlete. So, you know, the stripping was only considered for just a few minutes. You know, the acceptance of being a fighter was just harder to accept because I was, you know, I came from a home of abuse. I didn't like violence. I didn't, you know, I would fight if I had to, but I didn't fight because I wanted to. And so to make that mental shift and decide, yeah, I'm going to be a fighter. I'm going to do the thing. That was the toughest, you know, decision for me.
Looking at that mindset, Frank, you know, it's interesting because we've had NBA Hall of Famers on the show. We had Eagles Hall of Famer Brian Dawkins on the show. And I'm really interested in like that champion's mindset and like what that looks like. And, you know, the thing that's been interesting here is we've kind of been, you know, grazing over it here a little bit. And I'm interested for you, like, you know, you've been at the top of your sport for a long time. What does that champion's mindset look like to you?
Well, for me, it's about just constantly improving. One of my early on in my career, one of my trainers gave me great advice. And he said, because I told him, man, I want to be a champion. That's my goal. And he said, great. Becoming a champion is hard, but staying a champion is the hardest thing in the world. Because then everyone knows what you're doing. Everyone's studying you. You become the new model. And so I really took that to heart. And, you know, for me, it's about constantly learning, about constantly studying, about constantly being involved in my craft and then making just small improvements, you know, every day, even just how can I improve to be better? And, you know, the hardest pill for me to swallow was to realize that my machine couldn't keep up with my expectations anymore. And that's when I was like, oh, you know, who am I really? Am I going to age and perform less than I really can? Or is this time to end it? And that was the deciding factor.
So I guess like looking at that, you know, I think something that's interesting, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I also see like adversity as a really big component of that, right? Like you look at all the incredible athletes and, you know, the best of the best, a lot of times didn't have it handed to them, right? They had to work for it every single day and become the best at like those just very basic things every single day. Did adversity play a big component in you, you know, being great at what you did?
Yeah, adversity was huge for me becoming who I am. And what's funny is this is a constant, you know, conversation that is had amongst, you know, speaking at schools and high performance and all these different things. Do you need adversity to become great? And I don't really believe you do. I just think you need a mindset of greatness or a mindset of learning and exploring and pushing yourself. And, you know, that can be done in various ways. But adversity was, you know, is one of my driving things because I never wanted to be, you know, how I felt when I grew up and have no money and have nothing. Like I never wanted to experience that. So that was always a driving force for me throughout my career.
Well, I guess looking at your fight with, you know, you talked about your body breaking down a bit. Your fight with Renzo Gracie was one that you lost due to injury. And it kind of seemed like, you know, a bit of the beginning of the end. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong on that, because you didn't have that many fights after that and your record did change quite a bit at that point in time. So I guess like looking at that, what were you thinking about, you know, when that injury happened? Did that kind of change how you were approaching fighting at that point in time?
The body just started falling apart, but my mind and intentions never really changed. So what I just started noticing is I get injured before the fight would happen at a more serious level. You're always injured a little bit, but I'd be like, you know, totally jacked up. And it didn't dissuade me in any way. You know, I just started, you know, the recoveries took longer. Like it didn't change my mental standpoint. It just, you know, it made it harder to perform. And, you know, from my standpoint, I just had to dig deeper into my mental faculties, you know, my ability to visualize, my ability to create, because, you know, like I could just feel I was falling apart and there was nothing I could do about it. So, you know, especially like when you see me fight Phil Baroni, you know, I'd blown my knee out, you know, ACL, MCL, PCL. I was in a wheelchair 2 weeks before the fight.
That is a horrible injury. I did that. My left leg, I blew all three of those out. And that is a rough recovery, man.
Yeah, it's terrible. And I still had to fight, you know, 2 weeks later. And so for me, or 3 weeks later, I had 3 weeks in between the injury and the fight. And, you know, I was in a swimming pool with my legs tied together, like swimming, like trying to do everything humanly possible to maintain my conditioning. But it really came down to my mental, you know, faculties. How, you know, could I overcome this? You know, my opponent was never going to beat me in my mind. Could my body sustain this? Could I figure out a way to win? And so, you know, the latter stages of my career, last 5 years, was all about really developing my mental game and my ability to, you know, take the machine for what it was, because it wasn't what it was when I started, and just perform at the highest level possible. That's how I approached it.
And you did retire around 40. And I'm curious, because that's relatively young. Like you look at somebody like Tom Brady, he's 43 and he's still playing. The granted, football is a very different sport. Somebody's not punching you in the face. Have you ever considered like, you know, would I fight again? Or was that door just closed for you at that point in time? Like you just decided that it's closed?
Yeah, it closed for me. You know, I always wanted to be the best. And then, you know, two things happened. I got old. And then, you know, that old trainer was right. Everybody studied my style and created a complete style just like mine. So I began to realize, you know, I wasn't going to be able to compete with these athletes. You know, they were bigger, they were stronger, they were younger, and I couldn't race machines next to them anymore. So I either picked easy fights and, you know, I did things that didn't give me passion, or, you know, I made a turn. And yeah, I never think about it anymore. I never, you know, I used to dream about fighting every night for 16 years. Every night I'd fall asleep and go right into fighting. And when I made the mental decision that I wasn't going to fight anymore, the dream stopped. And that to me is a clear sign that my brain and my passion, my desire had changed. And so I can't ever see going back to that and trying to dream again.
That's an interesting perspective, because if you look at a lot of athletes, you know, they're the very few people that die twice, right? Like when your career ends and kind of, you know, that part of your life is over. And then, you know, when all of us say goodbye at some point in time. And I guess for you, like, how did you then decide what that next part of your life was going to be like? Because it is a new life, because, you know, a lot of times we identify as whatever it was we were doing for that time. So I guess for you, like, how did you identify what the next period of your life was going to look like?
Well, I had always made plans to sort of exit. You know, because when I started, the sport was dying. When I came back, it experienced a bunch of growth. I was, you know, very lucky to be at the end of that growth, or beginning of that growth, that new growth. And so I was always making exits. You know, I was always, you know, taking acting and learning to speak better. And, you know, I always saw that there was going to be a career afterwards. And, you know, I made small investments into that while I was fighting. With that said, once it was over, I really didn't know what to do for a couple of years. It took me some time to get, you know, my focus, but all those small investments that I made, all those little steps, speaking and teaching and mentoring, all those things became my second life, because that's what I was good at. And that's what my real passions were anyways. So I take a lot of people and I help them. It's funny now, a lot of my friends are retiring from like large corporations and they're going through this transition and they're like, well, what do I do next? You know, we spend a lot of time identifying their passion and, you know, starting to march them across that bridge so that when they get there, they're comfortable and they're not, you know, living in the past or in a future where they're uncertain. And I just did it by, you know, made sense. I should build a bridge because the body won't last for forever.
And I guess looking at, you know, this UFC or even just mixed martial arts as a whole, how do you think that sport has changed, you know, since your time in it? Like, how have you kind of seen the development and the change in that world?
Well, the development of the athlete has gone as expected. And one of the reasons why I retired, like, I could see them growing and me, you know, getting old. So that's certainly grown. The distribution, the reach, also the global acceptance of it. You know, one of the things I'm very proud of is if you look at martial arts schools now, there are more mixed martial arts schools than there are traditional martial arts schools. So there's been this huge social change of awareness and acceptance. And for that, I'm very, very proud of. As a global sport, I mean, you can go to any country now and there's, you know, mixed martial arts. You know, go back 20 years, I had a student in France who had a mixed martial arts school and the police came in and arrested him for sparring.
Because, wow.
Because it was illegal to mix different things around. Very old law, very old thing. So if you just think of the progress we've made, you know, it's been tremendous.
I guess when you look at it, you know, who have you admired most as a fighter? You know, it could be somebody that was, you know, in mixed martial arts at the same time you. It could be from a different, totally different type of fighting. But who have you admired most as a fighter?
People that I looked up to were old, but they were Chuck Norris, Muhammad Ali, Bruce Lee, George Foreman. And, you know, in mixed martial arts, I would say the guy I identify the most with or I look up to the most would be George St. Pierre, GSP. You know, he took a very athletic presentation, you know, very solid martial arts, you know, foundation and principles, and he used those to become a champion. And that to me is what the journey is about. And I like the other guy. Like, I like Tito. He's my friend. You know, I get the whole bad boy thing with the Diaz guys. You know, I get all that. But, you know, I've always had sort of this, we call it a PG-13 brand and presentation because I like, you know, that's what I looked up to when I was young. And that's what I'd like to present that our sport is. So, you know, anybody that kind of stands for something that, you know, presents themselves in a really strong way and has good morals, that's very attractive to me.
Well, Frank, we put out to our Instagram followers in a story yesterday asking if they had questions for you, and you were kind enough to share it in yours. So we got a few back for you. So I'd like to kind of jump over to a few of those listener questions for you. We have at Daniel Ruiz 444 wants to know on Instagram, what fight do you feel you were your best at?
Oh, you know, physically, I was at my best with Tito Ortiz. You know, just the best physical at that time. I think I was 20. I don't know how old. I think I was older than that. You know, it was the very first time that I felt like a super athlete. That was my tool in the fight, to overcome the weight and the height and all the strengths that he had. You know, that was the first time where I felt like my machine was better than everybody else.
Well, he was coming down a weight class. Isn't that correct?
No. So this was before, back when there was no 185. It was just 199.
Got it.
And above and 199 and below. So he was coming down to 199, which, you know, he's got to lose 30 pounds to do so. I weighed 191 pounds. So it's a massive weight difference, height difference. You know, everybody that I spoke to from, you know, my side of the world were telling me he's too big, he's too strong, you know, you can't match up against that. But I really believed that with the machine that I had and the way that I was prepared physically, you know, I could outlast his machine. I could, you know, beat him. That was my first realization that I was a super athlete. You know, I was like, this I can do for a very long time. And so I'm very proud of that preparation and the application inside that fight.
Well, we have at J Emma would like to know, what have you learned about fear as it pertains to fighting and also as it pertains to life?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. Well, you know, my biggest fear was that someone was going to, you know, kill me while I was fighting, you know, that I would, you know, it's a very dangerous sport. At the time, you know, we didn't have great regulation. You know, I was literally traveling around the world fighting people. And so I had this really strong fear, because violence is scary, that I would die. And, you know, it took a moment in a fight where, you know, I was fighting Ensign Inoue in Japan in 1998, and he was bigger than me. You know, he'd folded me over, was like elbowing my face in. And there was one moment where I was like, I'm going to die. Like, this is it. And, you know, I just kind of looked at it and went, well, if this is my moment, then, you know, he's not going to, like, I'm not going to die. I'm just going to keep pushing forward. And I kind of stepped over this invisible line of fear, you know, by facing it and by saying no and going and moving forward, you know, kind of crossed over that fear thing. And, you know, I think a lot of people have this when they face fears in their life or when they have a near death experience, where they cross over this little bridge. And that's what happened to me. From that moment on, I was never afraid someone was going to, you know, kill me in a fight. And I was also ready to put everything on the line and, you know, face death, if you will, or, you know, put everything out there. And that changed my whole perspective on fighting.
We have one more listener question before I get my final two, before I let you go here, Frank. And we have at Aiden Hilm wants to know, what advice would you have for young men that are trying to find their purpose?
Oh, wow. Great question.
Yeah, we had some really, really great questions from our Instagram followers. I only picked three, but we had a good 25. So we had some really good ones.
I love it. Yeah, it's a great question. You know, a lot of cultures have cultural things that help men become men. And in our society, that somehow got lost. All of a sudden, you're just supposed to wake up and you're supposed to be a good man someday. But if you look at leadership, if you look at messaging, if you look at film, you know, there's no strong explanation or direction, or, you know, we just lost that in our culture. So one of the things that has helped me become a really good man is first being a father, but second being a community involved person. You know, I care about my neighbors. I care about, you know, I have a neighbor who's disabled. We check on her, you know, every day because she's been in a wheelchair for 50 years. And I can only imagine how hard that would be to live a life like that. So for me as a man, I feel obligated to make sure she's okay. I feel obligated to be there to help her out. So being involved in your community, you know, be a father if you can. And then, you know, to go back to where we started in this conversation, learning to protect yourself is such value in being a man. Because if I can't protect myself, how can I protect somebody else? How can I protect my children? How can I protect my community? How can I feel good about myself in a situation if I don't have the confidence to say something, to stand for something, and then if need be, to do something about it? And that's why I always recommend, you know, martial arts. I mean, any martial art, anytime you're connecting mind, body, and spirit and learning something in the combative arts, you're training in martial arts. And there's such value in that. And like we said earlier, for me, that's what built my community. That's what gave me this care and compassion for people, because I don't want to hurt people. I want to help people. And it's through that process of interacting and training and learning and studying together that I've developed this compassion for people. I think the biggest strength you can have as a man is having kindness, you know, to be kind. And that there, you know, there's such value in that for everybody. And as young men, you'll see that come back because people will be like, oh, he's a good man. He's kind. And people will want you to be around and they'll want to give you more leadership, kind, you know, support, you know, whatever.
Absolutely. Well, Frank, I have two final questions for you that I ask every guest before I let you go. And the first being, if we were to take a look at Frank at 21 versus you now, what is something you believed at 21 that you do not believe now?
Oh, wow. Well, sadly, I believed at 21, I was going to live a very short life. Like I just, wow. You know, 21, I would have been in Folsom Prison. So just, I spent 10 years incarcerated. And, you know, every time I'd get arrested or every time I'd go in front of the police, they'd be like, listen, you're not going to last long doing this. And I really took that to heart, but I didn't know how to change it. And so I never thought I would live this long. I never thought I would have a family and that all my dreams would have come true. I tell the kids at school when I do these, you know, school speeches, you're going to live a long time.
So you need to think with that and the decisions you make in that.
Right. It's really, you know, everything you do now is just going to, you know, build you up to who you end up being. But at that time, you know, I had a police officer tell me when I was 16, you know, you should leave this town because eventually we're going to shoot you, you know, on accident or on purpose because you're doing bad things. And so just those, you know, those life experiences, I never thought I would live this long. And now my new goal is to live to 100. You know, I've got a whole life plan, financial plan, you know, community impact plan, so I can live to be 100. And that's the new goal.
Well, from the time I was 17 to the time I was 21, I was very into like souping up cars and driving way too fast and doing all that sort of stuff. And I'd gotten a lot of tickets. And I remember the kind of halfway through that whole period, I stood before the judge and he goes, well, son, unless they sell horse and buggies, you should probably think about what you're doing. And it's true, though, because I don't think we consider those things, you know, when we're younger, because we are invincible in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Frank, this has been an incredible experience. I've learned so much today, and I appreciate you being willing to spend some time with us. For the people listening, if they want to connect with you, follow you, and learn more about what you're doing, where's going to be the best place for them to go?
Sure. I'm on all social media at Frank Shamrock, or you can go to frankshamrock.com and hit me up. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, Frank Shamrock, thank you so much for spending time with me today on the Create Your Own Life show.